Attraction. The following are some of the definitions offered by Noah Webster in the 1828 dictionary. It is classified as a noun. The power in bodies which is supposed to draw them together, or the tendency or principle which inclines them to unite or cohere. The act of attracting. The effect of the principle of attraction. Attraction may be performed by impulse or other means. The power or act of alluring, drawing to, inviting, or engaging, as the attraction of beauty or eloquence. Contiguous attraction is that which is exerted between minute particles or atoms at insensible distances. When this principle unites particles of the same kind, it is called affinity of aggregation. Cohesive affinity or cohesion. When it operates on dissimilar particles, producing union, it is distinguished as heterogeneous and called chemical attraction or affinity. Elective attraction in chemistry. It is that power in substances which elects or selects from a mixture of those elements with which they have the strongest tendency to combine. Mary Baker Eddy states that mind is the only source of power and therefore the only source of attraction. Power is really the measurement of performance, and performance is really the result of a creative activity of which mind is the only source, and the capabilities, facility, functionality, and other related qualities of mind, which coupled with the omni-action of mind to produce the performance. So then if we think of that as being the ingredients of performance, then power is really the measurement of the performance. If one shops for a car and they're looking for performance, they're going to look at what is termed things such as horsepower and torque, and relating that to time. In other words, from a standing start to 60 miles per hour or 100 miles per hour or a quarter mile, what are the number of seconds that is required to reach that degree of measurement? And apparently the term horsepower is a holdover from the horse and buggy days. If one couples this line of thinking with the 1828 definition of attraction and substitutes anything that relates to body as being our entire realm of thought, speech, and action, as has been explained in other recordings, and that the only attraction can be that of good, because Mary Baker Eddy defines good in the dictionary as being spirit, God, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction, then the standard is set for anyone striving to cultivate a spiritual nature, or rather reveal to themselves what is already inherent in the kingdom of God, which is all within one, only to be revealed, and also thinking of spirit being flawless, and that being the only substance, and utilizing the spiritual senses of soul in order to identify everything properly. And of course, there must be a spiritual structure, which is principle, with a system that aligns with the spiritual structure, and life, which is really the exercise of the spiritual qualities of God, and then truth, which is the measurement and the discipline that keeps us on track, and of course love, which is the source of all plan and design. That's our blueprint, because love enables the coordination and cooperation and smoothness of blending everything together. It is the common denominator that dissolves all friction, all chaos, that is the relationship, or that results in the relationship, which is totally coherent between all of the qualities of God. The mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And of course, all the attributes, which basically includes the entire vocabulary of the language. Or it is a reminder of the opposite, which does reveal the counterfact. And by that I mean that if something is not in accordance with the definition of good, which is spirit, God, omnipotence, omnipresence, omniscience, and omniaction, then it is merely theory that should remind us to shift our thought to the counterfact to that theory, which is the truth, and truth itself. The truth being a small t, and truth itself being a capital T. The small t designating a relative view, and of course, with a capital T, the absolute truth, which is one of the seven terms for God. So everything in the vocabulary of the language can be divided into two categories. One is theory, which is a reminder of its opposite, which is the second category, which is truth. As Christ Jesus, Mary Baker Eddy, some other biblical characters besides Christ Jesus, and practitioners of Christian Science, such as Frederick L. Rawson, Wentworth Winslow, and others who have proven the reality of truth with a capital T, they've all demonstrated that if one lets the attraction and lets the body, the real body, which is of spirit, which should be the containment of all thought, speech, and action, no matter what the topic is, it's not two legs walking around, but includes everything in one's realm of thought. Business, relationships, events, anything in thought, speech, and action is the body of the individual of which that is the TSA. Thought, speech, and action. So the decision needs to be on the front end what is going to be the standard that one wants to follow. What is one trying to cultivate as being their one and only overpowering goal for every moment that they're going to devote to accomplishing? Are we going to remove the false appearance layer by layer, getting down to the essence? Or are we going to accept the theories, which could be individual, group, or universal, that are opposed to truth with a capital T? Are we going to focus on the relative and try to constantly go back and forth, utilizing the dance of mortal mind, or, as one friend of the Institute stated, the dance cards? Which card are we playing out? Or are we going to get out of the dance of mortal mind and keep that wall that is supposed to be perpendicular exactly at 90 degrees? If we let it be 89 degrees and are building a skyscraper, we're in real trouble very quickly. Because then the attraction is going to be gravity, and Humpty Dumpty is going to fall off the wall, and the wall is going to come crashing down. So in accordance with one of the last definitions that I read from the 1828 dictionary, we want to utilize the elective attraction. We want to replace, not try to improve, every effort of thought, speech, and action to be devoted to the attraction of the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, which is God as defined in chapter 14 of Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy on page 465. That is the beginning of the Recapitulations chapter, which is a summary of the first 13 chapters. So she begins with the most important thing to begin with, God. The entire book begins with the chapter on prayer, so we understand what is effective prayer. Is it asking God for something? If God is omni-knowledge, which He is, He's all-knowing, He's omni-knowing, He's omni-wisdom, omni-intelligence, are we going to try to advise omni-intelligence of something, when in fact that same omni-intelligence is omni-knowing? What kind of information are we going to give to the all-knowing, omni-intelligent, omni-wise mind? Are we greater than infinite? Because mind is infinite. Are we trying to tell God something that we think we are wiser about and more knowing about than He is or it is? Because God is not a person. God is not a he or a she. However, all of what are deemed to be the finest qualities of a woman and the finest qualities of a man are already inherent in the all-knowing. God doesn't have to know anything from us. We only have to improve our view by peeling back, removing the veil that Genesis chapter 2 tries to instill in thought is inherent in our nature. But what does it say at the beginning of Genesis chapter 2? How about there went up a mist? Genesis 1 through the third verse of Genesis 2 is the record of the revelation of the real world, the real universe, the real infinity of spirit. But after verse 3, it is merely trying to create a theory that we will accept and live by, that man is a sinner. Is man a sinner? Mortal man is. But is that the man that we want to be reflecting? Is that the man that is our guide? Is that going to be our standard? Wentworth Winslow says, think of yourself as being in a room, and there's a telephone in there, and there's a radio. The radio is a unilateral broadcast simplex. Doesn't have any ears. You can talk all you want to, but it's not going to listen because it is broadcasting the truth. It is all-knowing. It doesn't need any information from someone trying to talk. And think of the telephone as being the opposite. It is duplex, and it is really a tool of a so-called mortal mind, or the devil, evil, Satan, any number of names that you want to use to describe the opposite of truth. It is duplex, like a telephone where two people can talk at the same time. So it does that purposely to try to aggravate and encourage an argument. Mr. Winslow says, do not pick up the phone. It's going to ring constantly trying to get your attention. But it can do nothing unless you give it attention, because it has no power on its own. The only power it can possibly have is the belief that we think it's real. If we know it's not real because of our standard, some of which has been mentioned previously in this recording, if we keep that standard of truth, then the telephone, first of all, will not be picked up. We won't be receptive to it. We're not going to open the door and let the salesman stick his foot in there, because once the salesman has his foot in the door, then he can put his hand in there, push, grasp onto it, and do everything to try to force it open. It's easier to block the door of thought than it is to clean it out once we have opened it up to things that are unreal. So the easiest time to stop the erroneous thought from entering consciousness is at the onset of the effort of it trying to gain entrance. And that means don't pick up the phone to begin with. Jesus did not see a blind man as being blind or a dead person as being dead, because those terms are only relative terms. He instantly, grasped onto the truth about the individual. He never saw a dead person dead. And notice what I said, a dead person. In other words, a personality. He never saw a personality. He saw the reality, the idea, the reflection, the shadow of God himself, itself. That's what Jesus saw. It was really the Christ which saw it, the Christ of the Jesus. Jesus as a man suffered just like all of us do. Took him 3 years to overcome all of the suffering and to see its nothingness. He couldn't see it clearly enough to prevent his crucifixion. And he had no support from anyone, even though he gave his entire effort to teaching his disciples and preaching to every place he went. He couldn't get the point across. So he had to show them, because they wouldn't believe him by talking, so he had to show them that there is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. He had to show them there was no reality in death. Death is only a theory. It's not a fact. All forms of evil are only theory. They stand a very good purpose, and that is to remind us of its opposite, which is the counterfact, which is truth. There is no counter to truth. There's only a theory to truth, or to an opposite of truth, rather. It appears real, just as many Christian scientists have defined fear as being false evidence appearing real. That's what error is. That's what the devil, animal magnetism, Satanism, any word you want to use that is impure defines a mistake in viewpoint. It doesn't change the truth. It is only changing one's view, letting the mist separate one's view from the truth. So we can either go blindly down our path that we're on, or we can be alert and awake and realize the difference between truth and error. We need to be a continuous filter on all that we view. We must be having that filter on the front end. We must classify everything. Before we spend one moment being defined as the smallest measurement of time, before we spend one moment on anything, we should automatically be filtering, classifying, deciding, is this going to further me along my path toward my goal? And hopefully that goal is total spiritualization of TSA, thought, speech, action. Because that's the short path to heaven. Heaven, of course, is within. Kingdom of heaven is within thought. But getting there is a maze like a bowl full of spaghetti. All of these theories are intertwined and trying to make it so we can't see through the mist, the mess. Mary Baker Eddy said, no moss for me. She didn't want to be in the mass of material belief. She wanted to have the pure thought. We need to recognize our connection with the only cause that there is, which is mind, the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind. And we also have to recognize the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. As noted in brevity earlier in this recording, each one of those have a very specific function to perform. However, they all blend together. We cannot think of substance, which is the only spirit, unless we do it in an intelligent way. Intelligence is from mind. So that is mind applying its atmosphere to spirit. How about soul, which is spiritual sense? Since spirit is the only substance, the only sense that we really should be devoting our thought, speech, and action to is spiritual sense, because anything else is theory. Theory. As Mary Baker Eddy states, human life is lie upon lie. Lie upon lie. Einstein states that compounding is the eighth wonder of the world. Think of having $100 and you earn 10% interest. At the end of 1 year, you have $110. And if you don't touch it, and you still have 10% per year profit, the second year you have a profit on $110, which is $11. And each year you have greater profit than the year before because your base is 10% larger than it was the year before. And if one would draw that out on a graph with an X and Y axis, the Y being a vertical, being the balance of your account, and the X being the horizontal axis, which represents time, and of course you would start at the far left corner at the bottom, and that would be zero, or it, you could say it begins at $100, which would be your beginning capital that you'd be referring to in this example, and you would find, if you connected the dots of each time frame, and assuming that they were going to be consistent, let's say 1 year, you would find that it would not be a straight line from year 1 to year 10, but it would be a line that would curve up. And the longer you go, the more the angle is, and finally it becomes a 90-degree angle, which means it goes straight up. That's the law of compounding. Mary Baker Eddy quotes the Bible. She says, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little, there a little. In other words, we must not try to accomplish everything in one step and be discouraged if we didn't do it. It's the moments that count. How are we using our time, moment by moment? If we use it productively, then we will eventually get to that 90-degree angle, and we will be recognizing infinity to its fullest. The four operators, the basic ones in mathematics, are add, subtract, multiply, and divide. The digits are 0 through 9. The digits by themselves mean nothing. But if you combine it with the operators and have a purpose, then you accomplish performance. I never thought of this before, but you could measure the performance of your mathematical exercise in horsepower, or in mathematical power, or in mind power, which of course is the best, because that's infinite. So the four operators in the system of divine metaphysics, which Mary Baker Eddy discovered, and that's written on page 146, where she says she reduced Christian Science to a system. Most people totally don't understand what she's saying, or they ignore it. But that is the science of Christian Science. The system is the science of Christian Science. So if you want to have consistent progress, you need to be understanding to some degree what she means by that sentence. I have reduced Christian Science to a system. And she told Laura Sargent, which is one of her closest right-hand members of her household, she says, I've hidden it. If I hide it anymore, no one will ever find it. It's like the things in the Bible. Many of them are hidden from the flashing glance. You have to contemplate. You have to advance your thought in degrees, a little bit here, a little bit there, precept upon precept. Those are the degrees. And together they end up with a compound effect. It's like the rabbit and the turtle having a race. They hear a little, there a little is the turtle. The hare wants to do it all at once and fails. He's sleeping as the turtle walks by and gets to the finish line first. We need to be like the turtle. Solid, steady progress, which has the benefit of compound formula, the compounding of adding, compounding the results of today's results added to the beginning of a higher balance than the previous day. Because we started out with $100, ended up with $110, so now we're working with a balance of $110, not $100. That's the effect of compounding. We want to make sure we're compounding what it says in the glossary, chapter 17, under the definition of good, which is the omnipotence, omnipresence, omniscience, and omniaction. That means all. That means one. That means only. So God, good, spirit, is the only power, the only presence, the only science, the only action. That's the basis under which we need to be operating. We cannot be operating with two steps forward and one back, or one step forward and two back. We'll get tired and have to rest like the rabbit while the turtle walks right on by. And we should keep track of our progress. The mayor of one of the most corrupt cities in the world, he was newly elected, because the population was so fed up with the corruption. So he was hired to make a change. And wow, did he. Wow. He turned one of the worst cities in the world to probably be the best. That's a relative term. But he hired a man who was very intelligent, very disciplined, as his police commissioner. The police commissioner ended up writing a book about accountability. And the theme was the book, if there's no accountability, it does not get done. It directs attention to the value of principle and love. Love being the plan and design, and principle being the structure with the spiritual system. I don't know whether he knew anything about Christian Science, but he certainly was a very good practicing Christian Scientist in terms of principle and love. Love is nurturing the truth. That's how you get to love. Love is the finale. Mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Love is the finale. That means that it is complete. It is fulfillment. You cannot get to fulfillment unless you go through the steps. Time has nothing to do with going through the steps. It is the receptiveness to truth that determines when you get to fulfillment. It can be instantaneous. Or it could be never, depending on the receptiveness of the individual. I guess that's probably the best way to say it. The receptiveness of the individual. How hungry are you? Are you hungry enough to even get to the first operator of the system of divine metaphysics, which is the Word? The Word represents the facts about God, the facts about all existence. But we can't even begin to approach the topic unless we're so fed up with the failures of mortal mind, which is an oxymoron, as Mary Baker Eddy clearly defines it, because mind is immortal, so mortal mind is an oxymoron, meaning that it's like saying this is black-white. It might be black and striped with white, or it could be gray, which is a mixture of black and white. But I didn't say gray, I said black-white. It's like truth and error. It's not this is truth error, because there's no truth in error. And there's no error in truth. There's no impurity in spirit. There's no flaws in something flawless. There's no opaqueness in something that is transparent. Flawless means it's totally transparent. Which is a far cry from anything involving humanity. Just look at any single government or any single organization. The human element always tries to mess it up. Greed, desire for authority, control over others, whatever. You can put any name in there you want, give it any flavor you want, but if you mix error with truth, you have error. It's like water and oil. You can stir that sucker all day long, or shake it, or whatever. But pure oil and pure water do not mix. truth and error do not mix. God and ungodliness do not mix. Theory and fact do not mix. It's either fact or it's theory. It's either true or it's false. It's either white or it's black. So what are we going to be attracted to? Here are some sentences from the references on the word attraction. And I'll just read one sentence. There are seven from Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. And there are five from Mary Baker Eddy's other writings. Due to the time already on this recording, I will limit my reading to just the sentence that includes the key word attraction. But whomever is serious about their spiritual advancement, it is encouraged that they look up each reference and read and study thoroughly the entire concept in each of the references, which would mean pay attention to what the position is in the book. Is it the first thing she discusses or the last thing? What is the title to the chapter? Where is the chapter positioned in relation to other chapters? And what was intended just a moment ago was where within the chapter is it discussed? Is there a subtitle? Is there a biblical quote or a quote from any other source that is associated with the reference? The view being expressed here is that the better one knows how to read and understand what is said, the greater the enhancement is from reading and studying a reference. One view along this line is that the more one knows about the author, the better one can understand what is said. Because only the author has a complete view of what he is stating. That's one reason Mary Baker Eddy stated that you must have a clear understanding of who Mary Baker Eddy is if you want to understand what Mary Baker Eddy writes. Because she says, if you want to find me, look in what I write. Therefore, anyone that tries to defame the author of something they wish to read is defeating themselves. It's totally self-defeating. You might as well forget the book if you're going to defame the author before you start reading it. And unfortunately, that's exactly what the mainstream news media does in their disinformation project. So, the first one is from a paragraph entitled Mental Elements. It's from the chapter on marriage, which is the third chapter in Science and Health. And the sentence is as follows. The attraction between native qualities will be perpetual only as it is pure and true, bringing sweet seasons of renewal like the returning spring. I don't know about you, but I don't see anything that is sensual in that statement. And remember, this is the chapter on marriage. The next one is from the chapter 4, and the title of that chapter is Christian Science versus Spiritualism. And the title to the paragraph is One Government. The belief that one man as spirit can control another man as matter upsets both the individuality and the science of man. For man is image. God controls man. And God is the only spirit. Any other control or attraction of so-called spirit is a mortal belief which ought to be known by its fruit, the repetition of evil. Well, I can see I violated what I was planning to do. But it must have been God's direction, because without the first couple of sentences that I read as a preface to the one that had attraction in it, it wouldn't make much sense. Because the one with attraction in it by itself reads, any other control or attraction of so-called spirit is a mortal belief. The third and next one is from Science and Health, page 102, which is from the next chapter, which is chapter 5, the title of which is Animal Magnetism Unmasked. There is no paragraph title or subtitle. There is but one real attraction, that of spirit. The pointing of the needle to the pole symbolizes this all-embracing power, or the attraction of God, divine mind. So there she is using attraction with both the synonym spirit and the synonym mind. So that's really the power of mind, which is deemed the attraction of spirit, which of course is the opposite of the theory of matter. So in other words, matter cannot attract or repel, because it has no power to do anything in and of itself. Only the power that one would give it by believing that it's real. So thinking about a storm, a strong wind, earthquake, fire, that is based on belief that there's power in matter, or there's power in a so-called mortal mind. Mary Baker Eddy stated that anyone living in her household needed to be able to have control in their thought of electricity and weather. The next one, which is number 4 reference out of the 7 from Science and Health, is from the next chapter, which is chapter 6. And I'm not cherry picking these. These are all of the references using the word attraction. And they just happen to be so far chapter 3, 4, 5, and 6 in sequence. So from page 124 from Science, Theology, and Medicine, the paragraph title is All Force Mental. Adhesion, cohesion, and attraction are properties of mind. It's a capital M. They belong to divine principle, capital P, and support the equipoise of that thought force which launched the earth in its orbit and said to the proud wave, quote, thus far and no farther, end of quote. So she's stating it straight out. It's not gravitation, it's not matter, it's not mortal mind. The only real attraction is a property of mind. And that can make the wave stop. She says, thus far and no farther. So one could be out in a sailboat, and all of a sudden, or it appears to be all of a sudden, a storm comes up and creates these tremendous waves, tremendous from a material viewpoint, where it could easily swallow up the little sailboat in relative terms. One could bring calm to the storm if they understood clearly enough this one little reference. Adhesion, cohesion, and attraction are properties of mind. The next reference, which is number 5, page 213, and we skip a chapter, and this goes to chapter 8, Footsteps of Truth, and there is a paragraph title of Good Indefinable. Every step towards goodness is a departure from materiality and is a tendency towards God, Spirit. Material theories partially paralyze this attraction towards infinite and eternal good by an opposite attraction towards the finite, temporary, and discordant. So remember what was said previously in this recording, that something that is ungodlike is only a theory to remind us of the counterfact, which is the truth. And she's basically saying that right here. Material theories partially paralyze this attraction towards infinite and eternal good by an opposite attraction towards the finite, temporary, and discordant. And of course, they can only partially paralyze it if we give credence to it. What are we going to see? What are we going to give value to? What are we going to recognize as reality? It's up to us. We're going to experience what we do with our thought, speech, and action. The next one is from Science of Being, again skipping a chapter to going to chapter 10, and there is no paragraph title here. The text is as follows. The material so-called gases and forces are counterfeits of the spiritual forces of divine mind, whose potency is truth, capital T, whose attraction is love, capital L, whose adhesion and cohesion are life, capital L, perpetuating the eternal facts of being. Electricity is the sharp surplus of materiality, which counterfeits the true essence of spirituality or truth. And that's a small t. The great difference being that electricity is not intelligent, while spiritual truth is mind, capital M. So she's mixing the relative and the absolute together in that paragraph. And she's famous, well actually this is two sentences, but she's famous for having long sentences, but this happens to be two. So she's saying the spiritual forces are mind, but the power from it is truth, and the attraction is love. Remember what was mentioned about love? Love is the plan and design of all existence. So the plan of love is to have the spiritual forces of mind be seen as the only potency, which is truth. An 89 degree wall, when it's supposed to be 90, has no power. The 90 degree, which is in accordance with the plan and design, is what delivers the performance. Okay, the next one, and the last one from Science and Health, number 7, the 7th reference, is from 536. And that's from, now that's into the Key to the Scriptures, because the first 14 chapters are Science and Health, and chapters 15 through 18 are Key to the Scriptures. So this is Genesis. And there is a paragraph title, and it's The Fall of Error. The way of error is awful to contemplate. The illusion of sin is without hope or God. if man's spiritual gravitation and attraction to one Father, capital F, in whom we live and move and have our being, should be lost, and if man should be governed by corporeality instead of divine principle, capital P, by body instead of soul, capital S, man would be annihilated. There we go. The fall of error is based on having a theory of attraction being gravitation. It's like criticism. Dr. Fluno, a genius of one of Mary Baker Eddy's students and a lecturer, and wrote an article on the word criticism, which is really a verb. It's an action word because it means nothing. It's like the digit 0 or 1 or 2 or 27 trillion means nothing unless it relates to something. So the word criticism means nothing unless it's put into action. And he states that criticism leads to perdition. I mean, that's total destruction. Total, not partial, total. A wipeout. So if we want to wipe out ourselves, very easy. We just criticize others. That's it. And we can even criticize ourselves. Criticism has no place in the system of divine metaphysics. A false belief of attraction has no place in the system of divine metaphysics. A false sense of soul, which means spiritual sense, which means sensuality, infatuation. Truth is the only thing that has power in the system of divine metaphysics. From Mary Baker Eddy's other writings, Miscellaneous Writings, page 173, which is chapter 6, she says, the perfection of man is intact. Whence then is something besides him, capital M, that is not the counterpart but the counterfeit of man's creator? Surely not from God, for he made man in his own likeness. Whence then is the atom or molecule called matter? Have attraction and cohesion formed it? But are these forces laws of matter or laws of mind? If one refers back to what was brought to the attention of the listener earlier in this recording, it was stated that we need to filter everything on the front end. And that's what we're talking about here. She says, surely a counterfeit is not from God. So when there's a suggestion in front of us, is it a suggestion of a counterfeit? Or is it an angel message that we should grab onto that is truth being delivered to us as a God thought? Okay, the next one is from Unity of Good. By the way, she ranks Unity of Good as being one of her most valuable writings. Page 35, and there's no paragraph title. The material atom is an outlined falsity of consciousness which can gather additional evidence of consciousness and life only as it adds lie to lie. This process it names material attraction and endows with the double capacity of creator and creation. And there's no capital letters here to where she talks about the evidence of consciousness and life that is a material sense of life. So to read it again, the material atom is an outlined falsity of consciousness which can gather additional evidence of consciousness and life only as it adds lie to lie. The next one, which is the third reference, is from Miscellany, and that's chapter 2, and it's page 49. Now, this is very interesting because it's basically a history of the development of church. So one could get lost in this and have a desire to go back to the very beginning of the conversation about this church. Very important. I'm going to skip this one because there's too much reading in order to get the total concept. But it's basically referring to if the attraction is spiritual, then it really cannot be resisted because it's so strong. And that's from page 49, Miscellany. Okay, the next one is also a Miscellany, and it's page 85, which is appendix to part 1. No paragraph title, but it says, "Another glory for Boston, another landmark, set in the illustrious list for future generations to reverence and admire. The Science Church has become the great center of attraction, not merely for its thousands of worshipers, but for a multitude of strangers to whom this historic city is the mecca of their love and duty." So she's referring to the Mother Church that was built in Boston. She's probably referring to the extension, but the key here is that she's talking about the reverence. So, in other words, we're talking about a spiritual attraction. And hopefully it's far above just the beauty of a structure, but it's the spiritual structure that we want to be attracted to. Mary Baker Eddy gives a very fine definition. Of course, everything she does is divine inspiration, so it's fine, F-I-N-E. But in the glossary, under church, indicating the church is the institution that affords proof of its utility. And it's a structure of truth and love. So that's what church really is. It's not a building. It's not a group of people getting together. It's the structure of truth and love, which is principle with a system. System of divine metaphysics. And the final one is from page 159, and that is chapter 6 from Miscellany. And she says, "Material theories tend to check spiritual attraction. The tendency towards God, the infinite and eternal, by an opposite attraction towards the temporary and finite. Truth, life, and love are the only legitimate and eternal demands upon man. They are spiritual laws enforcing obedience and punishing disobedience." Now, the words life and love are lower case, so she's indicating that this is the human element, and that the attraction to the spirit is what we should be striving for. But like Jesus, the magnitude of his humanity is what enabled his divinity. So we have to start with where we are in our thought. And if we're working from the human level, then we have to be striving to maximize the qualities of human life and love by exercising things such as vitality in life and thoughtfulness and caring for others, consideration in love. And by maxing those out, we will then have the opportunity to touch the divine. Like Jesus showed us in his life. The maximum of his love for man enabled him to reveal the true love for God and God's image. That's the end of the references. And the important thing about attraction is that we have to make sure that we're using our king-size effective filter on the front end, and we forget about things such as infatuation or lust or greed or control over others. And we don't want to focus on the black dot, like the professor who hung a sheet across the room, a white sheet, and had a little black dot in the middle. And he asked his students what they saw, and they were focusing on the little black dot. And he said, no, that's not what I want you to see. I want you to see the purity of the big picture. Broaden your scope. And that's what we have to do. We have to see that God is the only control, the only real attraction of any value. Not a person, not a personality in any way, shape, or form, not an event. And one shouldn't be celebrating when they gain a certain milestone. They should be expecting it as a spiritual unfoldment. And say, I see now the confirmation. As Mr. Rawson said, when he healed the man that had a load of rocks dumped on him and totally covered him up, and he said these words, there is nothing but God. And the man jumped up through the pile of rocks like a rocket, totally uninjured, not a scratch, no evidence, no trace. That's what we must remember when we're thinking about attraction and force, whether it's considered atomic action or whether it's earthquake, wind, fire, doesn't matter. We have to be focusing with clarity on the only real force, and have spirit being our only real attraction. There is nothing but God. Amen.